The UAW strike against General Motors ended late last year. GM lost billions in production costs, while workers at places like Romulus Powertrain gained little.
Is it a perfect contract? No. I mean, but GM got what they wanted. We pretty much got what we wanted. And, you know, that's the best we can hope for.
The strike was traumatic for a lot of people, the longest national strike since 1970, but so much has changed in the bigger picture over those decades. Today, we're going to talk about what lessons the strike offers as we get further into 2020, things to keep in mind about Michigan's broader economy. Tracy Samilton reports on the auto industry for Michigan Radio. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
And Charles Ballard is a professor of economics at Michigan State University. Charlie, welcome.
Thank you.
Tracy, let's start with you. What do we know about the position that the industry finds itself in right now and the damage that the strike did to the big three?
Well, I think we learned what we knew from past strikes. Strikes are always really damaging. They're damaging to both sides. General Motors lost $2 billion. The analysts I speak to say they may not be able to make up the lost production from that. Workers were really, really hurt. You know, they had to pull back on budgets. They weren't getting, they were getting about a quarter of what their normal pay was. It went on for weeks. A few stores maybe even had to close, but it hurt the businesses that people were, using, the workers were using. And at the end, you know, they resolved the issue, but it was painful to get there, and we knew it was going to be painful.
Charlie, what indicators do you see of the effect that the strike had on the larger picture of Michigan's economy?
Well, the obvious one is employment, which went way down in the October jobs report, likely to go back up when we get the November jobs report. But I think really instead of focusing on the short term of the strike, I just see these in context of the longer trends of the shrinkage of the automobile industry. 50 years ago, the auto sector alone was one quarter of all the dollar value of Michigan's economy. Now it's about 8%. And then employment also has gone down, not just because of lost market share for the American companies, but also because it takes a lot fewer people now to make a car. And the jobs, instead of simple repetitive tasks in the factory of 50 years ago, the jobs in the auto sector now tend to require more skill. They often involve computer training, being able to fix robots and all that sort of stuff. So the industry has changed in ways that have not been favorable to the archetypal Michigan worker of a few generations ago, who was not necessarily well-educated, but who had two strong arms and a strong back and showed up on time.
Tracy, one of the premises of the GM strike, from a union perspective, was that times are good. You know, the past few years have been strong in terms of sales, that maybe this was the time to bargain in hopes of winning more manufacturing jobs at wages that could support families. Could the union potentially get GM and other employers to shape the next stages of production in ways that might benefit the workers? Do you see that happened?
I don't really see that happened. General Motors and Ford and Fiat Chrysler, all three of them did make product commitments for their large plants, but that's the bread and butter of any contract talks. That's the sort of expectation.
It should be baseline.
Yes. Yeah. And so the folks that were thinking, you know, the union rank and file who talked to me and said, you know, we want the companies to move factories from Mexico back to the U.S. To give us more of these high-paying jobs, that did not happen. And I think It's really not a surprise that didn't happen, but there are still people who want that in the rank and file.
It's hard to deny, and Charlie kind of alluded to this, the dominance of traditional vehicles, especially SUVs right now, but forecasters are saying that electric engines are where the industry is headed. Why is that of interest to the union's thinking about the future? And I mean, Charlie, you mentioned that there were fewer jobs involved in the industry. That's partly because of automation, but partly because of new trends in EVs, right?
Well, an electric motor has a whole lot fewer parts than a traditional internal combustion engine. And so the forecasts for the electrified future of the auto industry, that's another hit for employment because it's just not going to take as many workers to put together those cars. And the union was legitimately concerned about that. Now, I would say that the union got a signing bonus, and they got some pay increases and other things. So it's not like they got nothing out of the strike, but they certainly didn't get as much as they had hoped for.
And I have to say, one of the things that they put into the contracts here is they have a joint task force with the companies now, with General Motors and I think with Ford also, on this electrification issue, because they want to make sure that what jobs there are to put together electric vehicles stay in the U.S. So they're studying this and they're very concerned about it.
Tracy, so much of the heat and light at events like the auto shows has centered around electrics and hybrids. What signs are you seeing about whether the domestic industry is prepared in 2020 to move farther into those markets?
Well, we're told that there are, oh my goodness, General Motors alone says it's going to have 22 electric vehicles, I think by 2022, but certainly a lot of them by 20 showing up at the end of next year. Most of the automakers are telling us that they have a lot of these models coming. So right now you might have 5-6 choices for an SUV. You know, if you want a small SUV that's electric, you may not have very many. It's the most popular kind of vehicle in the U.S. We're being told these vehicles are on their way. They've been designed. They're ready to go. The issue, of course, is how can you get the price of these vehicles to a point where people will choose that kind of SUV over a traditional model that runs on gas?
It's been less of a problem for high-end makers, but for people who are making cars for the average buyer, it's mm-hmm. a different story.
Yeah.
Charles, can you tell us a little bit about what you think of in terms of the more positive spots in the state's economy? And if we look at the picture of diversity that we have, what is Michigan in a position to build on?
We certainly have a much more diversified economy than we had a few decades ago. That's both good and bad. The good is that we have added a lot of things. There are there's IT, there's companies like Neogen in Lansing doing biotech stuff. The chemical industry remains strong with Dow and many others. I don't see it as being one magic bullet, one big new thing that will take the place of the auto sector. Rather, I think it's going to be a whole lot of things. The healthcare sector is growing in Michigan just as it is all across the country. So I think of it as a really, we have opportunities in a host of areas. And frankly, for me, I don't think we should put all of our eggs into the basket of manufacturing. I want to continue. If I were in charge of Michigan, I would certainly continue with trying to diversify our economy. I don't think we can ever achieve the kind of future that I think we deserve and I hope for unless we do more investments, particularly in transportation infrastructure and also in education.
On the one hand, you know, we see targeted strategies centering on tax breaks as a main pillar of this. But is there any structural challenge in trying to bolster both where traditional strengths are located and trying to move into areas that the state would like to do more of?
Let me give you my view about the tax break strategy, which is I will admit that this is controversial. Not everybody agrees with me. But as I look at the history of handing out millions and millions and millions of dollars of tax breaks to businesses that promised that they would do stuff and often didn't deliver on those promises, I would actually prefer an economic development strategy that relies less on those things, relies more on providing the infrastructure and the educated workforce that the companies need. Tim Bartik at the Upjohn Institute has done research indicating that the majority, very large majority of projects, where they end up, they were going to end up there anyway. And the tax breaks have drained our treasury such that we have crumbling roads and a variety of other big challenges on the revenue side. And so I'm not convinced that that's been a very smart strategy. I would much rather have a kind of a broad level playing field, and then also roll out the red carpet in other ways by emphasizing the quality of life that we have here.
Tracy, I believe there are going to be some projects getting underway in the new year that may rely on tax breaks. Can you give us the backstory on how tax breaks have worked out in the past? Is this something that we can point to and say, you know, this much tax incentive has actually yielded jobs for people?
Charlie was just talking about, I'm not even sure it's that controversial anymore. You know, we have the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, you know, a conservative think tank, and Upjohn, a progressive think tank, basically coming to the same conclusion on these tax breaks, which is a lot of these jobs probably were going to be created anyway. They are considered, you know, an inefficient way to stimulate the economy. So we've got Ford getting $35 million in tax incentives for two of its plants, and it says it will be creating new jobs using those funds. But the question, of course, is, would it have had to make those investments anyway? Would it have had to create those jobs anyway?
Michigan Radio's Tracy Samuelton. We've also been talking with Charles Ballard, economics professor at Michigan State University. Hey, good talking to you two. Let's make it a regular in 2020.
That would be great.
Sounds great. Thanks very much.